Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And James Grosvick.
Hey, James. You know, one of the things that we've bounced around, I don't know, a couple of times or a few times. I know we've done data analysis. We've done a bunch of other stuff on asset management and criticality and all those kinds of things. But how do you deal with prioritizing risks? How do you sort out where to focus? So I know how to do that in the product development world, but I'm curious what your go-to tool is for doing prioritization of when you got lots and lots of things that could go wrong. How do you sort that out?
So I normally start off with the asset criticality first. Understand which assets are most critical to the operation of the facility or mission of the organization, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. Once I do that, then we look at an FMEA, failure mode effect analysis. And we'll use that to kind of identify all the different failure modes and risk rank those, decide which ones we're actually going to deal with.
Well, I mean, it seems, I mean, I'm happy to hear you said the same tool that I used to go to. And it's a pretty popular and widespread tool. There's no doubt about that. And we'll probably, I'll have to add a link to, you know, what is an FMEA if we're catching you off guard. But I know in Speaking of Reliability, Carl and I have talked about it numerous times. A handful of other people have too. But I'm curious, I mean, do you use what I would call a process FMEA, or is it, do you use design FMEAs? Or I'm thinking just out of ignorance of getting deep into the asset management world, factory world.
Well, I call it an equipment FMEA, and it's the operation. It's based on the operation of the equipment. Okay. So, you know, just like RCM, what is the function of this equipment? What are we trying to get this equipment to do? So a pump, for example, is the pump, you know, mm-hmm. for example, 100 gallons per minute with so much head pressure, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then you might list all these secondary functions, you know, are they protective functions, environmental functions, appearance functions, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then from there, we identify the functional failures and identify the failure modes that would cause a functional failure for each one of those.
Okay. So pretty similar. It's not really a design FMEA where you're going to influence the design and design changes, but it certainly would focus on where you need to monitor or do measurements or improve the maintenance processes or that kind
exactly.
of stuff.
Okay. Exactly. And, you know, we may identify areas that are candidates for redesign. You know, maybe maintenance isn't the best approach, or maybe it's not going to be as effective as it could be for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. So we might identify opportunities for redesign as well. But then we're going to use that criticality ranking, that, you know, probability, severity, detectability, to come up with a risk ranking. Mm-hmm. And that may drive which redesigns we're actually going to look at, what activities we're actually going to investigate. Because let's be honest. On a typical FMEA, you have hundreds or thousands of lines. We're not going to address every single one of those. We're going to address the most important ones.
Usually it's three. or if you really got a good team, maybe 20, the first page. Years and years ago, I was teaching a class on reliability topics, and it was to a group in the Navy Air Command group, and it was their reliability folks, essentially. And one of them came back from lunch with this manila envelope. Somebody had mailed him like almost a ream of paper. It was a big fat packet that he got. And he was getting ready to open it. And he goes, this is, and we were just talking about in the class about FMEAs. And he goes, this is the FMEA on this XYZ not to be named wing structure. And this is, and I said, it takes that much paper to do an FMEA on a wing? And it says, you know, it's got like, I know it's more complex than I know of it is, but it has to stay attached to the plane, you know, yep. and the flaps and ailerons and stuff have to work. And the little blinking light at the end of it, it's probably got to work and, you know, things like that. But how many ways can it fail? You know, how many? And he goes, so he opened it up and he looked at it and he goes, if, But they're supposed to look at every single rivet, every single joint, every single connection on the entire bill of materials. And unless they did that, this isn't complete. I was like, what? You know, so this is the classic bottoms up, look at every component and every connection. And I said, how many ways can a rivet fail? I mean, it can be too tight, it could corrode, it could fall out, it could be too loose. I mean, and if you got 4,000 rivets on this thing, you have to look at every single one of them.
And does the probability or detectability or severity change for each one of these?
Oh,
or
no.
Is it all the same?
Yeah, they're all the same. But he said some of them are in more critical places than other ones. And I said, okay. So how many are in critical places? He said about 10. And why don't you just look at those? You know?
Yeah, that would make...
And you'd save 400 pages, you know, and he goes, no, it's the way it's supposed to be done. And I said, well, how much of this does anybody ever really use? And he goes, well, we use the first page, you know, maybe two pages, you know. Well, why don't you just do it so that you get 10 pages deep into this thing, and you've got a very high probability that you will have covered all of the things that are most important if you have it done properly. He goes, oh, we can't do that. These contractors always outsource it to somebody that doesn't know the design at all. And they're just doing the bill of materials. So they don't know what's important or not important. They have no history on this. Why is that? I went off the rails at that point. Why do you think that's even acceptable? I don't know. Do you run into that where folks just take the bill of materials and send it off to some third party and go, oh, we did the FMEA, move on, check the box?
I've seen it done that way, and I've also seen organizations that do that internally. So they'll spend the time to go through each component, identify what the function of that component is, how does it functionally fail, and then all the different failure modes associated mm-hmm. with each one of those.
Screw number 647, it could not be torqued correctly.
And then when you do that, though, you get these massive, massive FMEAs with hundreds of or tens of thousands of lines.
Yeah.
And nobody ever cares except for that top 10%.
Right? Not so even that. Yeah, maybe the top 100 items, but the team is bored and spent 3 months on it.
Yeah. So yeah. One of the things that I struggle with in, you know, teaching people FMEAs or getting them over that point where they've been soured on FMEAs mm-hmm. is talking about a top down versus a bottom up.
Right.
So what you talked about there was exactly a bottom up. So what is this individual component? What is the function? How does it functionally fail? What's the failure modes for each one of these and so on and so forth.
Right.
And you're doing it for nuts and bolts and washers and things that really don't make a difference. Whereas a top down is really, you know, you could, depending on the complexity of the system or asset that you're working on, you know, you might break it into subsystems and then talk about what is the purpose of the subsystem? How does this subsystem functionally fail, what are the failure modes that are associated with it, and do that for each subsystem, or just, if it's simple enough, just doing that at the top level or the asset or piece of mm-hmm. equipment level.
Well, like you said, with the pump, its primary function is to pump, and its primary failure mode is it doesn't pump with the appropriate head pressure, and you quantify exactly what a failure is. And you might have, you know, doesn't have a sensor to warn you. If the sensoring system warns you that it's not failed or failed, that might be a criteria. Its mounting structure might be another subsystem of it that you care about. But it could be on the order of 5 or 10 things. And then a more complex one, it might be the hydraulic system, the air system, the, you know, pressure system. It could be breaking it down into those primary things. But then what I find when you do it that way is the team very quickly usually is segregated. There's the electronics guys, the mechanical guys, there's different groups that have different ways they touch that equipment or look at that process. And it helps them all understand how complex everybody else's part of it is. And then you get everybody on the same board to say, this is where we're going to go work. The power supply and power distribution part is their biggest issue. We got to solve that. And by getting the mechanicals and everybody else, yeah, that makes sense. That's the serious problem. You get rid of infighting, you do all this good stuff, and then you focus on the area that you now the whole team understands, that's where we got to invest.
Yeah.
You know, but it's 3 hours or 6 hours max and two pages.
And you don't discourages a team from ever doing an FMEA again.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah. So, you know, we talk about it when I talk about a top down or that type of approach, you know, it may be 2-3 pages. It may be a complex system. You might be looking at 5 or 6 pages, but you definitely don't have 100 pages.
Oh, no.
And what we generally find is you'll do it in extremely less amount of time. So, you know, instead of being, you know, locked in a room for a week, you might have 2 2-hour sessions or 2 3-hour sessions, and that's it.
Yep.
It's done.
Yep.
Are we going to get every single failure mode? No.
No. And it doesn't matter. We're getting the ones that are the worst. They're the ones we got to deal with.
What we generally find is when we do it, we'll still hit 60 or 70% of the common failure modes.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah, we're going to miss that other percent. But what's going to happen is, since an FMEA should not be a static document, it should be something that's updated continuously as we learn, we're going to add in these missing failure modes when we do a root cause analysis or when we do a bad actor analysis and we start finding out what are we missing, what's not working. And we'll add to this over time, and it'll develop over time. But you can develop a bunch of them and get them in the system, get them working, get them moving in a method that is efficient and still effective.
Yep.
Because there's nothing worse than doing that bottom up and then sitting on it for weeks or months or years before it even gets implemented because it's so big. Nobody wants to touch it.
Yeah. I don't know where that came from, the bottoms up approach. I think it was probably a mill standard at some time, you know, and that was probably created by a contractor that wanted billable hours. But it's just mind boggling to me. One of the comments I've gotten years and years ago when we're getting ready to start an FMEA study, was, what are we going to learn here? Because the only thing we're going to talk about are things that we already know about. And go, yeah, you're right. Yet what you know is different than what Sarah knows. You know, what Sarah knows because of her expertise is different than what George knows, and so on. So,
in addition, no one has it documented anywhere.
That's right. Well, to more or lesser degree, often much lesser. And then a similar circumstance, we're getting ready to start a session, and this was with a client of mine, and the director of this team wanted this outside person, me, to come in and facilitate it. And the electrical engineering guy, manager, was, I don't know why we're wasting time on this. And he was telling me this, and he was, this is a waste of time. I need 2 more engineers. We've got all these problems we got to solve. It's a huge burden. We're the critical piece to the process, blah, 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 blah. And he was trying to just justify his headcount and how much he's working. And by the first break, we went for about 1.5 to 2 hours. We took a break, and he came up to me and he said, you know something? My problems are pale compared to what these other guys, the mechanical team's facing. you know, I had no idea. I apologize for sounding so negative at the start, but it's very evident now that I need to throw in and help those guys be successful, because if they're not successful, it doesn't matter how good my electronic systems are.
Yeah. Right?
You know, and
absolutely.
And that was the objective of the director, was to get his different silos to understand where the priorities are and why. It was to have that discussion and move it forward. And I imagine with the maintenance teams and ops teams, I could see using an FMEA to say, now look, if we don't actually do the maintenance on these 5 critical parts of this equipment, we're going to be down for a week. And here's the background on it, as a way to get that discussion going of just run it to failure instead of doing preventative maintenance. I mean, as basic as that, an FMEA can help that discussion, because you're looking at your system objectively, and how does this fail? And how often does it fail? What's our experience? What data do we have? What's it take to fix it? How do we detect it? And it's that level of discussion across those cross-boundary teams becomes so invaluable.
Yeah, the other thing too is it gives a prioritized list of the risks that we need to manage as a group. Mm-hmm. You know, like you mentioned, that the electrical guy thought he had all these problems, but when you risk rank all those, you can see what is truly the biggest risk that we have. Okay, how can we work on this cross-functionally and make it go away?
That's right.
Right. Everyone's working from a single agreed upon prioritized list.
I don't think it's going to be the magic tool to eliminate resource scarcity and battles for all the resources and prototypes and money and headcount and everything else. But it sure helps. It certainly does.
Now, it absolutely does.
Yeah. Now, one of the best FMEAs I went to was at the guy I was working with, Mike Silverman. He called me one day and he says, "How would you like to do a project in Paris?" Like, well, that sounds cool. I've never been to Paris before. And he goes, "But before I go too far, it's Paris, Texas." Like, what?
Not the same.
Well, they have an Eiffel Tower. It's an old oil derrick with some lights on it. It's set up in the middle of the town like a statue. But it was a bottling plant. And they were looking at improving their changeovers and whether or not they had enough opportunity to do that or not with the redesign. So they had the folks, and it was, I think, Siemens or some big German company. It was the designer and manufacturer of the bottling equipment, that piece of equipment. So they had two of their engineers. They had two or three folks from ops and from maintenance. And then they had a couple of folks from that been operating similar equipment or the equipment. And so there was probably 10 people altogether in there. And they wanted me in there, which I didn't really understand why, but because they didn't have anybody looking at the reliability part, the long-term part of it. So I brought that in. And it was very, very well done. It was respectful. The operators, the folks that were on the floor brought in experience, and the rest of the team knew that they had hands-on experience day in and day out. So that what they talked about carried a lot of weight, which was refreshing. I've seen it where the folks are not even invited that really should be there. And then it's imposed. We're going to work on this. And the operators are going, "Why are we working on that? How come we're not working on this over here?" That kind of thing. So that was cool. That was my very favorable experience in Paris, Texas.
And you know what? They are such a versatile tool. You can, like you said, you guys were using them looking at changeovers and how to improve changeover time, mm-hmm. and using them that aspect. A lot of people know from quality on how do we eliminate the risks of quality issues. Mm-hmm. You can use it from a maintenance perspective in designing that maintenance strategy, or a design perspective, trying to improve the design before we put into use to reduce maintenance and other things. Yep. They're an incredibly versatile tool, and yet most people avoid them like the plague.
Yeah.
And I think it's because, in some of them, Google FMEA template online and you'll see hundreds and hundreds of different examples of templates. Half of them have different columns, failure mechanism, failure mode, mm-hmm, failure mm-hmm. effect. So terminology isn't the greatest for people who are unfamiliar with it. But then a lot of people have experienced that issue where it is they've sat through a bottom up and they never want to relive that again.
Yep.
So then they avoid it.
Yeah, definitely. I know Carl Carlson. I mean, he's written a whole book on FMEA, and it's really, really good. Practical FMEA. I should look it up. I'll put a link in it for it. But he's written a whole series of articles that go through very practical, common sense way to approach it, to deal with it. The harder part is the facilitation, right? You put three engineers in the room and you say, "Hey, this part might fail." They're going to go off and work on a solution. On the first thing that comes up, they're going to, just dive straight into that and try to solve it. Well, wait a second, guys. That's the first problem. We've got 200 more to consider here. Let's work on the one that makes sense to work on. Oh, okay. And reel them back in. And Carl's written about that. And that's the hard part, is facilitating it so that you don't get one person dominates and thinks he knows the solution to everything, or that, like that electrical guy, he was willing to listen to the rest of the team and realize that there were bigger problems than what he was seeing. So he was willing to change his mind. There's people who come in and want to railroad it to their project.
Well, that's, there's multiple things there you hit on from a facilitating standpoint. You don't want the SME to be the facilitator, because he will railroad that thing in whatever direction he wants to prove he's right or smart or whatever the issue is.
Right.
Right. Two, how you facilitate is just going to play a large role. So what I found over time is you know, instead of going through line by line, identifying the failure mode, the cause, the effect, the risk ranking, then the mitigating action, what I'd have a tendency to do is just go through all the failure modes, mechanisms, effects, maybe do the risk ranking, but I don't touch the mitigating action till the end, because what I want to do is I want to risk rank everything. And if it's low, I'm not going to worry about a mitigating action for it.
Yeah, we don't need to put brain power into fixing exactly something that we're never going to go fix.
Exactly. So you break it out that way first. The other thing I found over time is some organizations, some people, they have a hard time going from that reactive, where how does this thing break, to proactive in how do we prevent this from occurring, mm-hmm. back and forth. They struggle with that. So if you do all the how it fails first, take a break, come back tomorrow or the next day, whatever it is, then do all the risk ranking and mitigation actions, mm-hmm. it helps them separate it, I find.
Yeah, and that's a key point, is the separating the severity and the cause. And sometimes it overlaps, right? The consequence of one thing is the cause of something else and so on, and they can nest a little bit. But by focusing on one column at a time, I agree, helps get the ranking clean in each of those areas.
Yep.
And that's a good point. Yeah, but
I
was going to say is I totally agree with avoiding the bottoms up, and then it's good facilitation. And then what else did you have?
Yeah, from a facilitation standpoint, the other thing I find is, and it's a little bit more work for the facilitator or a scribe or whoever, but if you're sitting doing an FMEA, people love doing them on spreadsheets or whatever the fancy tools they have on the big projector screen in front of everyone.
Right.
I find that absolutely kills any momentum or any energy in the room when you do it that way.
Yeah.
Right. It's
got to be on the wall. It's got to be visible to everybody.
Exactly. Whether it's flip charts, whiteboards, post-it notes, I don't care how we do it, but have it up on the wall where people can see it, where you're just writing it down, and your job is the facilitator, or if you have a scribe, to put it in a nice format after.
Yeah.
But if you're worried about trying to format it, make it all pretty while you're facilitating, it is going to slow it down to the point where it's going to become painful again, and people aren't going to come back. You need to be able to keep it moving.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've said they're great tools and they're not easy to do well, I think is kind of the message here, right?
But with that being said, the only way you're going to get good at these is doing them, practicing, trying them. So, you know, your first couple are going to be rough. And if you don't do them for a while, when you come back, they'll be rough again. But you'll get better and they'll get smooth and you'll get them to where you can facilitate quickly, effectively, and not scare everyone away.
I think that was Effective FMEAs. That's Carl's book. I'll still have to look it up. But a great resource is this Carl Carlson's series of articles that are all on FMEA. And he also, he tends to get a lot of questions and comments on his articles. So he's and very responsive. So if you're going to dive into it, or you know you got to fix your process, and please avoid the bottoms-up approach, Carl's a great resource to pull a bunch of good practical, useful knowledge about it. And he goes into depth in talking about facilitation and those kinds of things. And I know at one point he was talking about building a course, online course, which is a challenge because so much of the facilitation is in person and live with people. So he's working on something like that. So we might see that coming in the near future.
Excellent.
Yeah. So FMEA is a great tool, and I appreciate that it's a great tool in the factory and asset management world, maintenance world, because it certainly is in the product design world. And it's also a great crossover tool, if you consider it that way. So you get the maintenance team working on the design for maintenance aspects back with your design team, and that might involve an FMEA. Because if you put that hatch in a place we can't open it, I can't fix it. Kind of thing. And it's better to know that early than later.
Absolutely.
So anyway, we're going to add some notes to this and some links to some more resources on FMEAs and get you a good start of where to go to master this or improve your process on it. Hopefully we gave you a couple of hints or tips of things to look for and improve your process, especially with the bottoms down or bottoms up approach to avoid that. But let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR and let us know how your FME process is going and what's working and not working for you. And if there's any particular questions you got on it, you know, we can get Carl on the line for an episode. And James, you've got lots of experience with it also. So chat again about it. Let's see what kind of questions we get.
Excellent.
All right. Well, thanks, James. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, friend.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.